This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Audible.com, offering the largest selection of audiobooks for your smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org for more information. And if you'd like to help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day, consider becoming a patron of the network through Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm and find out how you can become part of the team. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Michael Dorn, Lieutenant Commander Worf from Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 196, Indiana Picard and the Secret of the Whatever. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me this week is Aaron Harvey. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including whether Shatner might once again play Kirk, Brian Fuller being named showrunner for the new Star Trek series, and we debate the StarTrek.com poll that asked which space pet you'd like to have. Then in the feature, we're joined by Matthew Rushing and Mike Schindler to discuss the TNG episode, Captain's Holiday. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Aaron. It's great to have you here on the Ready Room with me for the very first time. You've been with me on From There to Here, but first time here on this show. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you very much. I was on Earl Grey last night, too, so I feel like I'm slowly becoming, at least this week, the Jeffrey Combs of the network. I'm bouncing from show to show.
You're everywhere.
I am everywhere.
For those who haven't heard your voice before, Aaron is our art director, so you've seen like all of our t-shirts and all the cool graphics we have everywhere. That stuff's being created by Aaron.
Yes, I'm strapped to a desk, and I have my Wacom tablet and Photoshop open and Illustrator. So no, I really enjoy just finding that one funny nugget from a show and you know, blowing it out into a meme that actually works as a shirt or a fun graphic. So it's a lot of fun.
There's been some really good ones. Then of course, Matthew Rushing is going to be on with us in a little while, and you took our long-running joke about the Orb Spring Wine Company and turn that into a shirt, which people can get there on our Redbubble store.
And I'm going to work on a 602 Club shirt, too. Actually, we had a discussion about that last week, so that awesome. That's on its way.
Very good, very good. Okay, well, we've got a lot of stuff to talk about today, so let's jump right into the news here, and we're going to start off with a story that I've covered on Hyperchannel, but I want to get your thoughts on it. And that's the story that came out about William Shatner saying that he might be willing to come back sometime down the road and play Captain Kirk once again, if the story's right. And of course today, and we're going to talk about this later, we got news of Brian Fuller and the 2017 series. It's finally taking shape. So tell me, Aaron, would you want to see Captain Kirk again? Would you want to see Shatner back in Star Trek?
It would be interesting. He talked about being an older captain, so clearly there'd have to be some sort of event that changed things around, or we just go with the conceit that it was before he died in the Nexus or something to that effect. Let's just, you know, play with that idea, and I don't know. I think it really depends if we have a new universe, if we have, say, a reboot of a reboot, or, you know, who knows what timeline we're going to play with. It's right. Totally conceivable that Captain Kirk is alive in that timeline, or maybe he's supposed to be the Pine character in the future. Maybe we're in the future timeline of the Abramsverse.
So Chris Pine's Kirk would look like William Shatner when he gets older, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
You'd have to like go with that and
okay.
And try and
so it'd be kind of like a reverse Anakin Skywalker looks like Hayden Christensen at the end of Return of the Jedi.
Yes.
All right. Maybe. I don't know. I could see that possibly working.
I'm just trying to think logistically what they could they could do.
Yeah. I don't know. See, for me, I don't have a problem with Generations, and I thought it was fun to see Kirk and Picard together. And I don't really have a problem with the death scene, although it could have been done a lot better. But for me, I kind of wish that Kirk's story on screen had ended with the Undiscovered Country, because it was just such the perfect final scene, and the Enterprise sailing off into the sun and the signatures, which were actually quite difficult to do at the time, on the screen. And it was just so perfect. And bringing him back in Generations, okay, it was okay. If he were to come back yet again, I don't know that I really need to see that. You know, sometimes I want to see the things that I love finish in a certain way. And it's kind of like Brett Favre coming back over and over in the NFL, right? And at some point you're like, Brett, just, it's enough. Okay, we get it. You're great, but let's remember you at your peak, right?
Yeah, no, I can see that. You know, and I believe that, and this is probably more of a literary Trek's question, but I believe that Shatner wrote kind of his own chunk of Kirk type stories.
Yeah, there are 9 books.
Yeah, the 9, like maybe he thinks that it's going to be in that universe. That
could
that
be
chunk.
Yeah. You know, so. And I wouldn't necessarily mind seeing that if that were produced. What I don't want to see is, I don't want to see him pulled into an episode just for a cameo to say, oh, hey, look, here's William Shatner's Kirk again.
Yeah, I think he said that he wouldn't do that. That would be, it would have to make sense, and it would have to have a meaning. So that would be, you know, and we, I don't know, would we also get some of the other characters then? Would the, you know, like Nichelle Nichols and Walter Koenig, you know, George Takei, like the ones that are still around, what that would be like, you know, would we get a little bit of a crossover with that?
Yeah, could be. I don't know. See, I think that would be a little bit too much of a gimmick, personally.
Yeah, no, but I understand. And he really doesn't want it to be a gimmick. He seems to be very, very set on it being a natural instance of him showing up in whatever Trek universe. Yeah. That's the other thing. We just don't know in what context.
Right. So we might have to go back and have this discussion 6 months from now when we know more about the show.
Yes.
And what it's going to be. Outside of the show, I mean, can you see him appearing in anything else as Captain Kirk? Maybe a
like
musical?
The variety, yeah, a musical, a variety hour.
Which he talked about, you know, that was a story, I think it was late last year maybe, where he didn't actually say, I want to do a Star Trek musical, but he made a comment, something about a musical in Star Trek, and then it got twisted around. But who knows, what if they did? You know, you actually, right before we recorded, you said that Bijou Trimble tweeted or posted about them doing a musical.
Yeah, they're doing California. A musical parody at Caltech sometime Caltech. This month and into March, I believe. So
yeah, so who knows?
That just came out, so I haven't. I mean, she may have posted a little bit earlier, but I haven't had a chance to dive into it. But and I could maybe see him. You know, we have these Trek talks coming up. Like maybe he would do something almost in the vein of the autobiography of Captain Kirk. Maybe he would be giving some sort of motivational speech or speaker where he's actually being that character, but you know, where he could be on stage and just, you know, a Captain Kirk one man show sort of thing, which I think would really fit well with what Shatner likes to do.
I believe he already read a chapter out of that right before it came out, if I remember correctly. I would love to see him do the whole thing.
That would be great.
That would be fantastic. Yeah. All right. Well, okay. We'll see where it goes. I was kind of curious what you thought about that. Let's see. We have one more thing I want to talk about here. And we haven't done this in a while on the Ready Room, but we like to talk about these polls that StarTrek.com has. And the latest one is interesting and kind of a stretch compared to what they normally do. This one asks, which Trek pet would you like to have? And they gave a number of options. And of course, you have to really dig into Star Trek to find the pets, right? Other than the obvious two, which are Archer's dog Porthos and Data's cat Spot. Beyond that, they also had up as an option a Tribble, Isis the cat, Ninja Cat for Andy out there. I kind of have a feeling that Isis the cat does not like being referred to as a pet.
Yeah, I don't. She's not a pet.
She's not a pet. She's actually a woman who can turn into a cat. There's also the Psylocke that Spock has in yesteryear on the animated series.
Which I know a little something about.
Yeah, that's right. And then there's Neelix the cat, who I believe was Barclay's cat. Is that correct?
Correct.
In Voyager.
Yep.
And then there is Christina the tarantula.
O'Brien's.
Wow, really, really digging deep right there to get the tarantula. So if you were going to vote for this, what would you vote for?
I would be torn between the Aichaya, the Salot, and I like cats, so Isis is not a pet, so I can't choose her, but probably Neelix the cat, just because I'm a, you know, Voyager fan and friend, you know, like to the journey. So
you like Neelix the cat better than Spot the cat, because Neelix the cat, you know which gender you're getting, and then they stay that gender the whole time you own them, right?
This is true, yes. Okay. But I do believe, maybe Neelix was furry, though, right? Neelix shed quite a bit.
Yeah, very hairy.
Yeah. I'm going to revert my answer to Spot.
Okay, yeah. Spot had much shorter hair.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so the results were Porthos the Beagle, 37%. Now, I would personally choose Porthos because I'm a dog person. And I love dogs. Plus, we could
Porthos
share keys.
Is adorable.
Yeah. So Porthos is great. Spot the cat, 28%. A tribble, 20%. The thing about a tribble is if you get one, then you get 100.
Or more.
Right? It's going to be very expensive. You're going to be going to the store all the time, having to buy supplies, you know, nature pet, quadro triticale mix. Organic, of course.
Our next t-shirt.
Yes. Now, 6% chose Isis the cat, which again, we're going to say Isis the cat is not a pet.
No.
So I don't think that you should vote for Isis the cat. The Psylocke got 5%, which would be kind of cool, right? Like if your pet was actually animated, it'd be like one of those movies, you know, like Who Framed Roger Rabbit kind of thing, where you've got the animation and the live action together.
Well, yeah, that Aichaya was definitely much more friendly than the Psylocke that we saw later in Enterprise, which was sort of a different type of animation, a computer graphic animation of a really scary looking.
Yes. Not something you want as a
friendly
pet.
No.
I'm pretty sure that Enterprise Salots are banned in San Francisco city limits.
I would imagine.
I think so, yes. All right. Neelix the cat, 2%. Christina the tarantula, 1%. Aww. So I would love to know who voted for the tarantula and why.
36 people, it looks like.
That's fun. Okay, so that's the poll. That's the poll. Very interesting poll this time. Different than the usual ones. It only says thousands of fans voted. Usually it says like 260,000 fans voted. And this one just says generic thousands of fans voted. So I'm thinking this may not have been the most popular poll.
As in 2,000.
Right?
Yes.
Exactly. All right. Well, let's move on. We have one more thing to talk about in news today, and this is the big story that broke just this morning before we started recording. And I noticed two people loitering over on the other side of the room who maybe should join us for this discussion. So, Matthew and Mike, you guys come on in.
Hey, what's up?
Are we able to talk now? Is that cool? I was trying to be really quiet.
Yeah, you were doing a great job over there in the corner on the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
But yeah, you can come in and talk.
Okay.
Yeah, and that last story that you did, you know, there was something that, you know, Aaron said where I was just like, what are you talking about? I so badly wanted to, but I didn't, you know, I thought it wasn't appropriate.
I could see him. He was yelling in his mind. It was crazy.
But that last thing that Aaron said was ridiculous.
Well, you did a great job, Mike. I can tell that you've had years of experience working in a movie theater where you have to keep quiet.
Yes, it's true.
Shush, ninja.
Okay, so the big news is, of course, that finally the 2017 Star Trek series has a co-producer, I guess a showrunner as well, Brian Fuller, who has worked on Star Trek for a long time in the past. 22 episodes that he wrote, 2 on DS9, 20 on Voyager. Of course, he also was on staff of Voyager from the 5th season onward and was co-producer in the 7th season. So he's very familiar with Star Trek and the canon and the Prime Universe. And it seems like an obvious choice for me. I'm not surprised at all that they chose him. But what do you guys think about it? So, Mike, I think you were maybe the first one who was jumping at the bit, like, we've got to talk about this today. So why don't you share your first thoughts here?
Well, this is like Christmas for me because I've been waiting for them to announce this. I don't care who it is. It's just, you know, as someone who does a podcast about the people who make Star Trek, the idea that there's a new person making Star Trek, it's like, wow, now we have so much more to talk about, right? And then I realized that I actually, not intentionally, but have not seen any shows that he's created. And I'm like, okay, now I'm freaking out a little bit. But I was actually surprised by this. You know, I think I mentioned this on another podcast somewhere. You know, obviously his name has come up, and I think when everyone was speculating that there would be a new series, I was saying, well, Brian Fuller, just like everyone else was. But then when they announced that Kurtzman was producing the new series, my thinking was, well, they're not going to get Brian Fuller or anyone like Brian Fuller because Fuller is a name already. So why would they hire Kurtzman? Because he's a name, too. It's like, what's the point, since Kurtzman's going to be off doing his big blockbuster movie? Why not just cut out the middleman and go straight to someone like Fuller? And then when they announced that he was going to be running this new television show, which is coming out, I think, I don't know, later on this summer, I'm like, oh, well, that's the nail in the coffin right there. He's definitely not doing Star Trek. That's sad, because it sounds like he really wanted to. And then they announced it today, and I'm like, what? Oh my God, it's crazy. Mm.
Matthew, what about you? Because now I don't watch a lot of television outside of watching Star Trek, which I don't watch on television, obviously. So I'm not that familiar with his other shows. I know them by name, and I've seen some episodes of some of them, like Heroes and Pushing Daisies, for example. But are you familiar with like Hannibal and some of the other stuff?
I am not familiar with Hannibal in that I have watched it. I obviously know about the show, but for me, it's not my taste. I'm not a horror fan, but I've heard so many good things about the writing in the show, the characters in the show. But for me, the show that Brian Fuller did beyond Star Trek that I loved was Pushing Daisies. I mean, that show is so good. It's so imaginative. It's so fun. The dialogue is incredible. The characters are rich and deep and just a blast. And so, you know, combining all of that I know from what he can do outside of Star Trek, what he can do inside of Star Trek, I'm excited. I think he's a great choice. You know, I really am looking forward to see what he's coming up with for this show with Kurtzman. And you know, his announcement and talking about what they might, you know, alluding to where they might go is cryptic and interesting, you know. So we have no idea when the show's set. We have no idea where it's going to go, what crew it's going to be. But, you know, from everything that he's wanted to do in the past with Star Trek, the ideas he's had, you know, they've all been fun, cool, crazy, good ideas to move the series forward, to move the brand forward. And, you know, he already understands television. But I think more importantly than that is that Brian Fuller is a fan. He likes Star Trek. He likes the Prime Universe, and he seems to like the JJ verse. So having somebody who actually likes the brand that they're going to be working on, I think is huge. And so that's the thing for me. When they announced that today, I was like, oh, well, I mean, that makes me more excited than I've been for anything in Trek in, you know, since 2009, I think, and when I really enjoyed that film, you know. So this is exciting to me. I think it's a great choice.
What about you, Aaron?
Yeah, I'm actually pretty familiar with his work. I've watched, you know, Wonderfalls, Dead Like Me, The Pushing Daisies, of course, and the Mockingbird Lane pilot that they did for the Munsters reboot, basically. And, you know, it was a lot of fun. And what I really enjoy is that he knows storytelling. He knows storytelling, and he knows how to actually have something that you can jump into and feel like, okay, this is still fun to watch, but there's an arc. And that's something I know he really wanted to do in Star Trek and was always kind of getting, you know, bumping against that that issue.
Yeah, at the time, of course. Yeah, yeah.
And so now I'd be excited to see him with, you know, the reins unleashed, and let's see what he can do. So yeah, I'm really excited about that. I think a lot of his shows that he's created are sort of like built into our own, you know, friends and family sort of like inside jokes and headcanon. And, you know, so it's like he's influenced quite a bit of just like the culture around me. So that's, I'm excited about it.
For me, not being so familiar with his other shows, just the fact that he has all this experience in Star Trek in the past and in the prime timeline is important to me because, again, I don't know if the show is going to be set in the prime timeline or the Abrams verse, but I would like to see it set in the prime timeline myself. And at least he's someone who knows that canon and he knows the material that he would be building upon. And I think that's really important because they could have gotten someone who is completely from the outside, which sometimes can be good. But in this case, I think maybe would not have been the most ideal thing. And having somebody who's familiar with the material. And like you said, Matthew, someone who likes the franchise is important.
Right. And I'm thinking, you know, obviously Star Wars did that with JJ recently. Looked how well that turned out. I think they did the same thing when they decided to, you know, do Jurassic World. They wanted somebody who liked it. Colin Trevorrow did that. So people that like the source material, I think it's really key. And I think of everybody who's doing the DC television right now, they love the DC universe. They love these characters. They have such respect for it. That's why the shows have been doing so well with the Berlantiverse and all the people he's got around him. So, you know, I think that TV people, the suits, are realizing that if we want our shows to do well and they're in these brands, we need to make sure that we have people who, one, understand them, but two, actually have a love for them. So that comes across on screen because it really does. I mean, if you watch, you know, Flash or Arrow, Legends of Tomorrow, Supergirl, you know that these people behind the camera, all the people working on it, they love the show. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's going to come out in this Star Trek series with Brian Fuller. I think he's going to bring that kind of effervescent joy for Star Trek back, you know, the kind of Star Trek that we remember, like with The Next Generation or Deep Space Nine, where it was really people who were in love with this idea and running with it. And hopefully, I'm hoping it's going to be more in the Deep Space Nine mold. And what I mean by that is to say that it is Star Trek, but it's also pushing the boundary of what Star Trek is.
Yeah, I think it would have to be in 2016, 2017.
Well, and what's fantastic is that he is an optimistic person. I imagine that he's going to bring that optimism back to Star Trek that seems like it might have been leached out a little bit, at least in the last film. But it just, every time I watch his stuff, it's like there's realism, but there's also just that there's a heart to it. There's just something there. And I think he's a really good fit for Star Trek in that sense.
I was just reading a quote from him that was on the IMDb prior to starting this recording, and it talked about, you know, kind of his love for Star Trek and, you know, the fact that he the way that he got into this business was by submitting a script to the open submission, you know, thing at that point it was Deep Space Nine, sold a couple stories, and then, you know, got invited onto the staff of Voyager. And, you know, he's very much sort of like a childhood fan of this thing. It's not just like someone who's like, I like Star Trek or whatever. He says that he got into writing because he wanted to write Star Trek. And I think just the idea that, you know, someone got their start in this industry by, you know, an open submission thing and then is now running the franchise, like, that's pretty awesome. I mean, that's a great story right there. And it is exciting. And, you know, also in that quote, which was a very long quote, he talks about how as much as he liked working on Star Trek for 4 years, he did find it restricting with the sort of nature of episodic television at the time. And based on those quotes, it really does sound like this will be much more of a continuing storyline and stuff like that. Also, he has said that Deep Space Nine is his favorite of the show, so that's cool.
Yeah. Okay, before we wrap up with talking about Fuller here, just looking at what he did in Star Trek, are there any particular episodes that stand out for you guys that you are especially fond of?
Living Witness. That's probably one of my favorite Trek stories overall.
Mm. And he did the teleplay, right?
Yes, I believe so.
What is it about Living Witness that connects with you?
It's something about it. It's storytelling, but it steps away from the tropes of the show a little bit. You're actually getting a different character, literally, than what the actual doctor is. It's a story about finding the backup module on a planet hundreds of years after Voyager has been through the system, and sort of the mistakes that they make about their assumptions of what happened in the past. And so it basically questions, like, how is history written? What actually did happen? And I liked the themes, and I liked how it was handled, and it was layered. It was a lot of fun.
Well, I have to say, you know, I love his work with M'Pok Noor. That was a great episode of Deep Space Nine. It's really creepy and scary, and it's an interesting, fun idea. I really enjoy that. For Tristan, from To the Journey.
To the Journey.
To the Journey.
Anyway, sorry.
Char would be TTK. So disappointed.
Yeah, she's so disappointed right now. But Spirit Folk, of course, you know, fantastic. I actually really enjoy Spirit Folk, just like Tristan does. I love those episodes. But for me, the best Voyager episode that he did was Bride of Chaotica.
Yes.
Because, I mean, he got Janeway into that amazing, I mean, he wrote that, so she's in this amazing, you know, goth 1930s, you know, villain outfit from, it's just so good. So what a fantastic episode.
What I see there is sort of the diversity, you know, on DS9, he wrote The Darkness and the Light, and then on Voyager, he wrote Pride of Chaotica, which we're talking about here, and Spirit Folk, which you mentioned. So you have this diversity of having these fun, lighthearted stories and then having these serious, deeper stories as well.
Yeah, I mean, think about that. He wrote, like, Barge of the Dead, and then something very character-driven with Seven, The Raven, mm-hmm. you know. So I think he's got a great range, and he understands that Star Trek episodes can be more than just one thing. In a lot of the same ways that George Lucas did with the Clone Wars, where he would tell different types of stories in that series. You know, he would do kind of a more horror type episode, and then they'd do a little bit more comedy. You know, Star Trek is like that too. You can do lots of different types of genres within Star Trek and the type of stories you tell. And Brian Fuller's kind of written every type of Star Trek episode there is. So that speaks well for what he'll bring to this new series. So again, I think, you know, when you look at his body of work and then you look outside of Star Trek, what the guy has done, I don't know why or how anybody could not be excited knowing that this is one of the showrunners for, you know, Star Trek 2017. Is that what we're calling it?
Sure.
Yeah, that's what we're calling it right now because we have nothing else to go on. So, Mike, what about you? Any episodes that stand out or any last comments there?
I mean, I guess the thing that stands out to me in general, which I really do like, is, you know, while most people, when they talk about, you know, theoretical things, you know, they might say, like, well, yes, it would be fun to go back to Star Trek, but who knows? We'll see what the future may bring. Whereas with Brian Fuller, you know, people would ask him, do you want to do Star Trek? And he's like, yep, I really do. And then they'd say, what would you do? And he's like, well, let me tell you exactly what I would do. You know, and he's given like a lot of hints as to sort of like what he would want to do. And, you know, one thing that kind of stands out to me is basically making it a return to the original series. You know, he keeps on talking about like bringing back the color, bringing back the fun of the original series. You know, some of his ideas have been like setting it in the JJ verse, you know, in the same timeline, but on another ship. I think he even like dropped the name of the Reliant in one, you know, interview or something like that. And just that idea of like returning to Star Trek's roots. I think this new show has to be that, you know, it has to be set on a ship and blah, 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 because for a lot of people, it is going to be their first Star Trek, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And I like that. I really do like that idea. And I have total faith in this guy, even though I haven't really seen anything outside of like Heroes and The Amazing Screw-On Head, which, you know, Amazing Screw-On Head was pretty good. Check it out.
Which brings me to the biggest question. How big will the nacelles be on the Reliant?
Oh, let's ask Daniel Prue from Earl Grey. All right. Well, one thing I want to point out before we wrap up the story here and go into our feature discussion, I noticed one interesting thing in the announcement that was on StarTrek.com. In this announcement about Brian Fuller, they quoted the original announcement when they announced that there was going to be a series. The only problem is they changed the wording a little bit when they quoted it. It doesn't say coming January 2017 anymore. Now it says coming early 2017.
If Brian Fuller needs an extra month or two to make this show awesome, then let him have his extra month or two. You know, they've already missed the 50th, so who cares?
It's fine with me, but I bring it up because I've had this feeling, as I'm sure many fans have, for months now, since we... Well, how long has it been since we got the announcement? It's been...
It feels
been
like,
that long.
It
feels but since, like 10 years. Since we heard it, every week that goes by, you feel like there's no information. There's no information. They really don't have much of a plan yet, do they? It doesn't seem like they have much of a plan yet. And now we find out they're just now naming an executive producer in Brian Fuller. So I've already been very skeptical about this series launching in January of 2017. And I think the fact that they changed the wording here shows that they're also not very confident that they're going to get this show out in January of 2017.
And it's not just fans who have been kind of worrying and wondering. It's people I've talked to who are in Hollywood who are also like, there's nothing happening. It's like,
yeah, because they know what's involved in putting the show together, yeah. Right? So there are certain steps that need to be taking place that aren't taking place yet.
You know, there's,
and
there's
if they
no
were
rumors,
taking place, we would hear about it.
Yeah, exactly. So, there's no scuttlebutt. There's no nothing happening that would indicate that there's something moving.
Yeah.
Until now.
Until now. So now we know. So we'll see. Things could speed up quickly at this point. So we'll find out. Okay, well, I'm glad we got to talk about Brian Fuller a little bit here in a kind of an unusual move for the Ready Room of bringing in our featured discussion guests in the new segment, but here we are.
We're so just breaking all the rules.
We're going to take a quick break here and then come back and talk about Captain's Holiday. Everyone gets a bit too stressed sometimes, and when that happens, it can be difficult to enjoy anything, even the negotiation of a successful trade agreement. When this happened to Captain Picard, the crew had to pull together to force him to take a vacation. But of course, a Picard vacation isn't quite like the ones you and I take. And today we're going to talk about Picard vacations and the episode Captain's Holiday. And to help us do that, you've already heard them if you listen to the news segment. From Commentary Trek Stars, Mike Schindler. Mike, how's
it going? It's going pretty well. How are you?
Good to see you're still here from the new segment we just came out of.
I am still here. Can't get rid of me no matter how hard you try.
All right. And also, of course, from the 602 Club, Literary Treks, and my co-host from the Orb, Matthew Rushing. Hey, Matthew.
Chris, I got to say, the newsroom is not quite as nice as the Ready Room. I mean, this Ready Room is really, really pimping. I love that you still have the fish there and the wonderful, you know, Stargazer model. This couch is not as comfortable as it used to be, though, after 196 episodes, though.
Well, I know, and Riker keeps putting his foot up on it, and it's kind of damaging the springs a little bit.
You know what? I mean, jerk. Since it's kind of cramped in here and everything, what if we left the Ready Room for today and went down to Riza?
Oh, that sounds like a good idea.
Hung out by the beach or whatever.
Make sure you leave your Horgon, because you're going to get bothered while we keep recording, so just leave that here.
All right.
But if we record, there's going to be like all the scraping from all the plastic outfits. I don't know if we're going to actually... It might get picked up by the mic.
Yeah, it'll... But it adds atmosphere, you know, which you need. Because
watch out for the Andorian.
For the Andorian, who's just fully dressed, sitting back there at the table. You'd think that they would be hot enough on Ryza without wearing all that clothing.
They're modest. That's like fur lined there too. I don't get it. It's weird.
I think the Andorian in this episode is kind of like the person who goes to the city pool and everyone is in a bikini or swim trunks, but they're wearing, you know, the t-shirt and like the full exercise pants because they don't want to be exposed to sun or for anyone to see their skin.
That's probably what it is.
I guess so.
Really sensitive skin.
Very sensitive skin, yes, yes. What happens to an Andorian if they get sunburned, by the way? Do they become like teal or purple or...
Purple, probably.
Purple,
yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, purple. Yeah, yeah. A really bad shade of green or something.
I guess. All right, well, before we get into the discussion, let's take a moment and do a synopsis, as we always do, for those who haven't seen this episode in a while. Picard has just finished negotiating a treaty between the Jemerians and the Daklids, and apparently he's feeling a little bit tired, so much so that the crew has decided to force him to take a break. The Enterprise just happens to be in the same sector as Ryza, a planet whose women Riker can't stop talking about. Picard is, as you'd expect, resistant to the idea of a vacation, but when Troy plays the Lwaxana card, he has no choice but to leave the ship. Okay, he didn't really buy that, but he was getting tired of being hounded by the crew, and so he agreed to go on vacation. Once on Ryza, he runs into an archaeologist named Vash, who is searching for an artifact from the 27th century called the Tox Utait. But she isn't the only one. There's also a Ferengi and two Vorgons from the future looking for it too. Picard goes on an adventure, does some exploring, and in the end prevents the artifact, which had the power to destroy a star, from falling into the wrong hands. All right, that's the basic rundown. So, Matthew, you were the one who chose Captain's Holiday, so why don't you kick us off with your initial thoughts?
It's funny, Chris. You know, I hadn't seen this episode in a long time, and we were talking about what we wanted to talk about in the Ready Room, and I was looking through the list, and I was surprised that this had never been done, because it's a pretty popular episode with people for TNG.
We were just saving it until we really needed a vacation, Matthew.
That's true, and watching this, and I thought to myself, man, a vacation on Ryza sounds perfect right now, but... Watching it again, I was just struck by what makes this episode so good is the fact that the cast is really, they have come together in such an amazing way. You know, this is season three, it's the end of season three, and everything is firing on all cylinders. Their comedic timing is perfect. The way that they're interacting with each other is phenomenal. The looks that they give each other where... You can almost tell the moment the take is over, they're bursting out laughing because everything about this episode, I think, in that sense, works so well. And it's what made TNG, I think, become the thing that won the hearts and minds of Trek fans, you know, right there, who... I don't know. It's not TOS. There's still no Kirk, you know. But by this point, I think everybody had been won over. And it's because the cast, you know, they are just so good.
You know, I have a tendency to, in my mind, place this episode later in the series, like around season five.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reason that I do that is because, like you say, the cast really are clicking in this episode, especially... Frakes and Surtees, I think, are really clicking here.
Well, that, and I was also noticing on this rewatch that when Gates comes in to talk to Patrick and she is giving him a hard time about needing to go on vacation and they're having that whole banter back and forth about, I can make you go on vacation, you know, as the doctor, and he's like, don't you dare. You know, this whole back and forth, there's such chemistry between those characters and between the actors, it feels so real. So these undercurrents of relationships between these people really come out with the way that they're acting. And goodness, when I watch an episode like this, I'm so thankful that Gates is back as the doctor in season three, because she just works so much better with the rest of the cast, and especially with the captain, than, you know, Pulaski.
Yeah, I'm picturing Pulaski coming in, and then Picard will be like, maybe I should go take a vacation so I can get away from you.
Yeah.
you know what's funny with that scene, I mean, just because you brought it up, is spoilers for From There to Here, but I just watched Shore Leave for an upcoming block of that show, and there's a scene which is almost identical to that in that episode where I think it's Bones, or it might be Spock. I think it's Spock goes up to, you know, Kirk and says, "We have a crew member who's, you know, not performing up to standards and he needs shore leave." And Kirk's like, "What? Oh yeah, you got to make sure that guy goes. What's his name?" And it's like, "James T. Kirk." And it's like, "Wah, wah." And here, like, you're watching it and the dialogue is almost identical.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
But it gets to a point where basically Picard is like, "I know you're talking about me and I'm not going." And it's not even like there's a moment where he's like, "Oh, you're talking about me." It's like just from the beginning, she knows she's not fooling him. He's not fooled by it. And he's just like, "No, we're not having this discussion." And I just love that little twist on what I think was an intentional mirroring of that scene in Shore Leave. And it was pretty great.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up. And first of all, I think that's because Picard and Beverly know each other so well. And this is a point where in the writing, he never goes there because he knows, of course, he's talking about me because they know each other so well. But I had not watched Captain's Holiday for quite a few years, just like I said last week about The Lights of Xatar. And I've seen it many, many times, of course, but because it had been so long since I've seen it, I was listening to that dialogue and I was waiting for Picard to say, "Well, you need to tell that officer that he needs to report to sickbay." And then he never did. And I'm like, "Oh, that's right." But in Shore Leave, like you said,
I was thinking the exact same thing, honestly. Yeah. That it was pretty awesome.
Well, and that was something that, you know, we talked about on the other side of the room, actually.
The other side of the room.
You know, this is Ira Stephen Bear's episode, and he loves the original series like Ron Moore does. And so that was probably his way of putting in a TOS reference that a lot of people wouldn't have caught.
Yeah.
You know, that were on the crew. And so when it's great that you caught that, Mike, because I had missed it as well. So that's so cool that we were just kind of talking about that, and it makes complete sense when it's coming from Ira.
So Aaron, your initial thoughts should be interesting, because I know that you're not particularly fond of this episode.
Well, I'm a little lukewarm on it. It's funny because I was thinking, it's like, oh, there's really no B plot. And it's like, I actually really, when I think back, the parts that I remember are on the ship and then the parts about time travel. But to me, it feels like the actress that they picked, Jennifer Hendrick, I think is her name.
Hendrick,
yes. That they just sort of put a bunch of actresses into a bingo machine and went, and then boop, okay, we'll put her with him. And I just, it never felt to me like they gelled. It was just sort of like, okay, they're supposed to like each other. And they played off of each other well. I mean, they acted, but I didn't, it didn't feel out of character for Picard to act the way he did, but it did feel out of character to act the way he did with her. It was just sort of like, if we're going to pull an actress who was on the show before, maybe like Stephanie Beecham, not because she's British, but just because it just, that temperament and that sort of slightly comedic, but a little bit more reserved, yet then she can become really fun. Mm-hmm. Vosh is just sort of, she's just out there, and she has no filter. And Picard doesn't like people with no filter. So I don't understand the connection they made.
Well, I think it's kind of a classic opposites attract kind of thing, you know, for Picard. And
yeah, maybe that's the problem I have with it, because that's a little clunky.
Yeah, it's an old trope, but I mean, when you have 44 minutes in television, you kind of you don't have a lot of time.
Yeah.
But what I thought was interesting about that is that Picard takes a while to warm up to her in this episode. I mean, we're 20 minutes in before he kind of sort of starts to warm up to her, and it's an interesting thing to have, you know. She's basically almost like a Han Solo character. She's the scoundrel. Picard is the upright, you know, one.
Princess Leia.
Yeah, exactly. The roles are reversed here. So it's a really interesting thing, because Picard falls for Indiana Jones, you know, and the roles are reversed, and I think that's a really interesting thing to see.
Yeah,
and that's what made it work for me and made it kind of fun. I don't love Vosh as a character, but I think this is her best appearance for sure.
Yeah, this is probably her best appearance. But I think also here that Picard has this side to him. The way I see Picard in a lot of ways is that, you know, he is an explorer and he does enjoy adventure. It's like here when she finally tells him, like, you are having a good time, aren't you? And he reluctantly admits, yeah, I'm having a good time. But he's the captain of the flagship of the Federation, and he's someone who has been locked into this situation where he's part of the bureaucracy. He has to toe the company line for Starfleet and the Federation. He has to keep himself separated from the crew. He has to remain in charge and kind of emotionally detached. But inside, he does have this aspect to him. If you think about the chase, where he's offered the opportunity to go out as an archaeologist and find these lost treasures, it's very appealing to him. And what keeps him from doing it is his duty to the Enterprise. If it were completely up to him, he would have gone with Professor Galen and searched for that stuff. So here he gets that little opportunity unexpectedly to do this with Vash. And I think he's maybe attracted to her because she's doing the things that he probably would like to do. I mean, he doesn't want to go steal artifacts, but he would like to have the adventure and not being locked away with the discipline of the starship, I think, if he could.
Yeah, archaeology is his podcasting, essentially.
Yeah. I was just thinking, there's Brian Fuller's idea, Indiana Picard and the secret of the whatever, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing about this and the reason why it works so well, I mean, you know, Matthew, you were talking about the cast gelling, and that's certainly true and everything. But I think a whole bunch of the credit needs to go to the script because the dialogue is so spot on. I mean, like, I haven't seen this episode in years either. And I always sort of thought of it as like, oh, yeah, it's the first one with Vosh. And hey, oh, yeah, and it's historically significant because it's essentially the first Iris Stephen Bear episode. But it's the one where he goes on vacation and there's a lot of, you know, half naked people running around. And, you know, that's cool. You know, you almost get to see Captain Picard's junk. So that's cool. But aside from that, I really don't know, like, I don't remember much about it. And watching it today, I was really kind of blown away by how good the writing is and how good the cast was. And it feels to me almost like a Howard Hawks movie, you know? I mean, it's like that sort of like whip smart dialogue and that sort of fun, like, adventure romance thing going on.
There was nothing extraneous.
It really works really freaking well. Now I need to go back and watch Cupid and Q-Less, you know, just to sort of complete the trilogy. But yeah. Yeah.
Well, you don't need to watch Q-Less. It's okay.
Hey, I like Q-Less. Okay. You know what?
I think it's funny because you're talking about the dialogue and I'm thinking of that line where Riker says, "Have I mentioned how imaginative the Ryzean women are, Captain?" Mm-hmm. And Troy says, "Too often, Commander." And the way that Marina delivers that line is just like, if I have to hear one more time how imaginative they are and how imaginative apparently I wasn't, I'm going to hurt you.
Well, I like when they're in the turbo lift and Riker is selling Ryza to Picard. And then all Riker has to say, and then there's, and Picard says, "The women, I know."
That's great.
Yeah, exactly.
to me, though, like,
he comes off as a horn dog in this episode. Just like, seriously.
To me, though, the absolute best line is when he finds out what the Horrigan is, and he's like, "I bought it for a friend of mine," and she's like, "Someone you care deeply about, right?" And he's like, "Yep, someone you love." Nah, I wouldn't say that.
I wouldn't go that far.
No,
exactly. It was an awesome line. It's delivered so well.
There was just the dialogue was spot on and the delivery was great. There was nothing extra. In fact, I think the only thing that I, you know, as far as like the whole story arc goes, I would have maybe added just a visual or something where it felt like they didn't just go like into a basement inside of Ryza or something like that. Cause it didn't feel like they're like some sort of establishing shot with like they're heading out, you know, there just didn't feel like they left anything, but they went around the corner, went into a park or something like that.
Yeah.
I know they only had so much, and I don't know where the money was and for that episode at this point, if this was one of those, okay, we've stripped everything away, so shoot on planet hell sort of things. And it may have been that.
They didn't spend the money on fabric for clothing, that's for sure.
Well, you didn't have to, because this is the episode of, like, skin. I was so shocked watching this episode, and, you know, people talk about Enterprise having so much skin, but I was like, I saw as much as that woman's butt as I did to Paul's, if not more, in this episode in a few shots. I was like, wow.
Quite a few shots, in fact.
That's yeah. 90s television right there, and I'm seeing whole butts, basically.
Guys, too.
Yeah, exactly. It's for everyone in this episode, so.
I can see, like, travel posters for Ryza to say things like, visit Ryza, don't forget your junk. Bring your
visit
junk Ryza. To
Ryza. It's always a full moon.
There you go. Yep.
That or Andorian fight scenes. Be careful.
I'll take your blood to Andorra.
Before we get too far away from your mention of Culis earlier, though, so in Culis, Sisko punches Q, and Q says, Picard never punched me. But here, what I want to see is a remake of Culis where over on the side, Rom is standing there, and he says, well, Picard punched me.
Yes.
That would because be awesome. He knocks Max Gradenchik right out here as Sovok in this episode.
Clearly, you've never dealt with my people. No, 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 we have.
Trust me, we have. Yeah. And that's why I'm not taking you very seriously. I mean, you don't even have fur or a laser whip with you. Come on.
Which would come in handy at Ryza, I'd imagine.
And, probably, and really, right?
And he's wearing really bad jams. I mean, let's just be honest. So, I mean, that's just not scary, a Ferengi in jams.
It's a little scary.
I'm picturing like, I think we're all old enough here to remember and have had when we were kids, underoos, right?
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
picturing some Ferengi underoos. Based on this.
Oh, gosh. That's awful.
You know, underoos are making a comeback. There's no
Are they really?
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. You can go into Hot Topic and buy underoos.
They have adult underoos now.
Oh, wow. See, this is what I don't know because I don't live in the U.S. So,
come on, CVS.
They would go to Japan first.
It would seem.
50th anniversary, CVS. Let's make this happen, you know?
Right.
Yeah, somebody send Chris a pair of underoos. Yes.
I can see, like, I'll get a package. My wife's like, what's that? Did you order something? No, I didn't order anything. I opened it up. Oh, it's one of our listeners. They sent me some adult underoos.
Go to Patreon at patreon.com and select underoos.
Nothing like getting a pair of Boba Fett underoos.
Okay, let's talk. We talked a little bit already about this being one of Ira's stories, his second story, I think it is, right on TNG. Any more thoughts on Ira's take on TNG and maybe where it might have gone if he could have done what he wanted to do, for example?
I think it would have gone to the awesome part of whatever. You know, I mean, watching this, it reminds me of a lot of the best episodes of Deep Space Nine, like the more comedic episodes and stuff like that. And bringing that sort of fun and adventure and that understanding of the characters as we can see in their interaction with each other, I think would have been fantastic. I mean, I'm not going to say that, you know, I would have rather seen Ira Stephen Bear do Next Gen than Michael Piller and Jerry Taylor, because obviously, you know, they did an amazing job with that show. But I would love to see what that was like. You know what I mean? It would have been amazing.
One of the things that, you know, this episode came about because Stewart famously was saying, I want to, the captain needs to get laid. And it needs to be more fun for the captain. And so, and I think you can see that Ira really gravitated toward that idea that the show needed to be interjected with a little bit more of that TOS type fun, and the same thing that he brought to Deep Space Nine with those characters. As serious as Deep Space Nine is, Chris, we talk about on the Orb all the time, that show is stinking funny.
Yeah.
I mean, And you know, I think Ira probably would have loved to have had a little bit more connectivity throughout the series of TNG as well. And I think one of the ways that you can see that is the way that he's writing these characters is giving the actors the opportunity to play all the subtext that's going on between Riker and Troy, between Crusher and Picard. In fact, the between Picard and Riker, where he's like, is there anybody on this ship who doesn't have, you know about this whole plot to get me to go on vacation? He's like, well, I think there's a couple of ensigns on deck 39.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, just that kind of writing, the Iroh is really comfortable writing these characters, being comfortable in who they are and who they are together. And you know, that's something he definitely brought, I think, to Deep Space Nine, is that family feel. And this is just like, this kind of feels like one of those old wacky sitcoms almost episodes.
Even bring in Troy's mom.
Yeah, exactly. We're even going to bring in Troy's mom. We're going to mention her to get Picard to go away.
That was one of my favorite parts.
It's just fantastic.
And then when he leaves to go to his ready room with Riker, you can see like Marina is actually laughing. Like,
yes.
This was the perfect idea.
And you bet, you know, it was hers too. She's like, what if I tell Picard my mom's coming? Yeah. He will be out of here faster than, you know, you can say Riza.
But the great part about that is that Picard didn't buy it for a moment.
No.
He knows exactly it's a setup. You know, there's no like, the only thing with Picard that got me here a little bit was that the way he trusted the Vorgons so much, and he was still going to give them this crystal at the end, after he unraveled Vasha's entire plan and the fact that she had already found it and she had hidden it and then she had led Sovok there so she could show him that, oh, the quest is over and we can't find it. But then he needs Vash to tell him, why are you trusting these guys? You don't know who they are. They could be bad guys from the future. And then Picard's like, oh yeah, I think you're going to need to show me some kind of ID.
They could show you, they could be from our or his time. There's no reason that they transported. That's all they did. They didn't do some sort of magical
but
future
they
thing.
They don't have head transporters in the 24th century.
Oh, okay.
Like, but don't you love that design? Like, of all the places on you, you could have some button to push. It's got to be like right on your temple.
Well, they've got
big heads.
I think
I'd much rather like the Darth Vader chest thing where I just press the button on my chest, you know, instead of on my head. Yeah. They've got
big heads. They're not using that side of the head for anything, you know?
Think about how inconvenient that could be. Like someone asks them a question, they're not quite sure, and they're like, well, I don't know, let me think. Oh, crap, I'm gone. So put their fingers right up on their temples. I'm thinking, now I'm somewhere else.
Yeah, if you sleep on that side too,
right?
Do you end up
over
in the park or
you
something?
You wake up in somebody else's bed. How did I get here?
That is awkward. Oh, I'm so sorry, ma'am. My bad. I just fell asleep on that side.
I usually sleep on my right side. I
must
have rolled over in the middle of the night. I'm sorry.
Related to that too, it's like when they ask the computer, it's like, what about Picard? You know, it's like, what room is he in? Oh, we don't have that register. You know, it's like, if he was there, would it just say, oh yeah, he's in room 326? It's like that. That does not seem like very good security.
That's right. If
you know, when Picard walks to see Vosh and she's cleaning up her room because the Ferengi has, you know, trashed it, the door's open. So apparently the security does suck on Risa, which we also learn in Let He Who Is Without Sin.
Oh, yeah.
Security's not great
not
on Risa.
Security there. Yeah.
Maybe nobody assumes that it's like because it's a vacation and it's supposed to be, you know, that would just be too much bother.
One would ever steal anything while they're on vacation.
No. Not at all. I mean,
it wouldn't be pretend to be somebody else and like seduce somebody maybe or
never
throw them in a basement.
Really easy to steal the towels and the bathrobe from Risa.
Right. All right. And speaking of the Ferengi trashing the room, he didn't have a lot of muscle behind him, right? Because all he could do is kind of like knock the plants over a little bit. It wasn't really trashed that much. She could just kind of set everything up.
Well, it's a Ferengi. Yeah. You know, they're not really known for their physical strength. And like you said, you know, he didn't have his laser whip with him to help him. So, you know, he doesn't have a lot going for him, unfortunately.
Did he find it when he trashed the room? Is that Not the first time.
He found it later. Right. But apparently she planted it in a way he would find it so that she could lead him down there.
Just think what she'll do when the doctor returns from the Delta Quadrant, the 29th century technology or whatever century it was from.
Yeah.
She can grab a hold of that as well, since she missed the Tox Utat.
Well, let me ask you guys, if you need to get some counseling on the ship, are you going to go to Counselor Troy or Counselor Riker?
I don't know. I think Counselor Riker is going to help me have a lot more fun. So, you know.
Here's the one thing, though. You know, I kind of felt bad for Picard because I kind of can see where he's coming from. And it's weird that they were trying to push him in the Risa direction because he's like, well, I wanted to go to this conference. And, you know, Crusher's like, what are you talking about? I mean, that to me seems like the equivalent of saying, like, well, I wanted to go to this film festival. You know, they're showing a bunch of Godard movies. You know, I mean, that would be like what I would want to do on vacation. They're like, no, go to Hawaii. And I'm like, that's the last thing in the world I want to do because, you know, there's sand and it gets all over. And
right. They would also be like,
is it coarse and irritating?
It gets everywhere.
They would be like, Mike, go to Hawaii and also buy this fertility statue and keep it next to you all the time.
Yeah, I would have the same reaction as Picard, honestly. I'd be like, you guys are the worst, you know? I'm like,
but I mean, on the other side, though, I can understand the whole point of them is to say he needs a chance to unplug, you know, to actually be able to relax, you know, and if Picard had been able to do what he wanted to do, which was to lay in the sun and read a book, I can imagine that would have been heaven for him. You know, he would have been able to do that. And so I think Crusher and the rest of the command crew are right in that he needs the ability to be able to let loose and have some fun and not always be so worried about, oh, I have to go do this or I could go to this conference and learn. You know, like you have to have those times in life where you just let loose and relax, however that is for you, you know, because everybody relaxes differently. I'm like Picard. I like to, you know, sit with a good book and read, and that's very relaxing for me, even if I'm on vacation. So, you know,
and do you get very annoyed if beautiful women come up and try to talk to you while you're trying to read?
Now that I'm married, yes.
Good answer, Matthew.
Thank you.
I like that Picard suggested the holodeck, and they're like, no. I don't know if that was because it's like, that's not relaxing enough, or no, that's just going to go horribly wrong.
maybe he had received a video of what happened on Voyager. And he had seen what Neelix did with the holodeck and resort spots and decided that that's just not for me.
That, or maybe he was worried about a Fairhaven happening to him and he was like, no, not doing that.
You're his holographic girlfriend.
Like Vosh turns into a cow or something like that.
Yes, yes. Well, and it's funny because I can't, you know, I can imagine Picard obviously going in and having an enjoyable time in the holodeck, but I can't imagine him going there for the things like that Janeway did where she kind of had the holographic boyfriend. You know, Picard is never going to do something like that. But him going on this adventure that he ends up on, like The Hobbit...
I'm going on an adventure!
Is really... Like, he meets somebody that he wouldn't normally meet. They connect in an interesting way. And, you know, he gets to know her and then know her. And, you know, that wouldn't have happened if he hadn't been pushed. And, you know, I think you can tell he comes back to the ship refreshed and rejuvenated because of the adventure he ended up having. And, you know, it's one of those things, like, we can't always necessarily see what's best for us, and that's why we have people around us to help take care of us. And I think that's a very small message in this show, but the idea of it does take people. It does take a village. You know, it doesn't just stop when we get, you know, into adulthood. We still need those people around us to help take care of us because we can't always see what we need if, you know. I think that's the most honest truth. We definitely don't always know what's best for us.
Well, Picard needs, like I said earlier, he needs some adventure. And the thing about the Next Generation is that you've got the first officer always protecting the captain, from having any kind of adventure. Now, I don't think Riker sent him down to Ryza with the idea that he was going to have that adventure that he needed, but that's what happened in the end.
Well, part of that adventure, maybe.
Part of the adventure. Well, he had a different adventure than what Riker had in mind, yes.
And it's really nice to see how they've all grown together as a cast and as the characters, because this, it couldn't have happened in season one. Like you're saying, it's just like, they, you know, the captain goes on vacation, no one would be recommending anything. He'd just be doing what he wanted to, whether they wanted it or not. And you wouldn't have all the ship trying to recommend that he go on vacation. It would just be like, well, the captain's being the captain and I'll just get out of his way.
It is kind of crazy. Like, even in season two, like, I cannot imagine this episode existing. You know, it's like a completely different show once you get to season three. It's crazy. I mean,
visually, it changed. Everything changed.
Yeah, visually. Yeah, everything. I mean, it feels like they rebooted the show almost. And I'm so happy about that. Nothing against season one or two, but, you know.
Well, and it was nice. You know, season three is so interesting because it really does. It does have that wonderful change for the entire cast. You know, they're finally comfortable with everything. Everything is going well. And, you know, it's going to, I think what's most interesting is that as you move forward, then you get to the best of both worlds at the end. And I think this is a great episode that really helps us finally understand the captain in a way that we haven't understood him before. And it starts us on a path to be able to get to the best of both worlds so that when we feel like we're going to lose our captain, that we really do feel something. You know, this kind of episode, as fun, as silly as it is, it's actually helping deepening that relationship between the audience and this captain, especially when you think about watching it through the first time as it was running. And then it'll allow you to get to episodes like, you know, family and that kind of stuff, where we continue to unpack these different characters and who they are, and again, especially our captain, and make him more human, you know, not so stoic. And this really sets us on the stage to be able to do that. And I, like you said, Mike, I can't imagine this episode existing in any other season, but maybe later, you know, like it is season three. And I think it does a great job with setting the stage for just how good it's going to get. And I just wish there were kind of more of these type of episodes where really we're, especially in TNG, getting to this level with these characters.
With the characters, right.
Yeah, they really are so good when they're firing on all cylinders like this episode.
That's what I feel with TNG. I love TNG. It's kind of my go-to series when I just want to put some Star Trek on, just have some Star Trek playing. But the stories are so often less about the characters and more about the situation the characters are in, as opposed to DS9, which we always talk about, Matthew, how the situation they're in is just a backdrop for the characters. Even the Dominion War is a backdrop for what's happening to the characters. And it's great that we have that contrast between the two shows, because depending on what you feel like watching at the moment, you can see that. But it is nice to get to know the characters, like you're saying, a bit more.
The low stakes nature of this episode is, I think, one of the things which works best on Next Gen. You know, I really wish, I mean, they do it a lot, you know, to their credit. You've got like Data's Day and stuff like that. But, you know, sort of like the episodes like that, like Lower Decks, where you just see what these people do on a daily basis, is far more interesting than any, you know, crazy alien that they're encountering. And it's almost like a breath of fresh air anytime you see that. And it does so much to expand that universe, more than meeting a million, you know, alien races ever could, because it really gives you an idea of what it's like to live in that universe. And I mean, that to me is, I mean, thinking about like my favorite episodes of Next Gen, they're always things like that, you know? And I think this is part of that, even though most of it does take place on an alien planet. It's an insight into the character, but even those few moments on the ship at the beginning of the episode offer so much. It's really cool.
I love that Picard negotiates some big trade agreement that they've been working on, and Riker's, congratulations. Picard's like, about what? Trade agreement. Oh, that thing. Yeah, whatever. Because it is like what they do all the time, right? It's just very routine for them.
And Patrick Stewart's performance in that scene is so great because it's so unlike anything you've seen Picard do before, but so completely in character. Like, oh, yeah. Mm. Like, he literally just grunts, you know? Mm.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I want to talk a little bit about prosthetic Vorgon gels. And hopefully some people listening will get that joke. I love that the aliens in here are called Vorgons, not Vogons from the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And I'm picturing if the Vogons came down to retrieve this Tox Utat crystal, they would have all kind of paperwork. Picard would have to fill out documents in triplicate. They would have to be stamped and approved and sent back. And he and Vash would just have to be sitting around waiting before they could head off and make out.
And a lot of bad poetry. I mean, a lot of bad poetry.
A lot of bad poetry, yes.
It would be awful.
History records that you composed the worst poetry known to the universe, Jean-Luc Picard. You have fulfilled your destiny, and we have verified it from the 27th century. Now we shall beam out with our temple transporters.
What I don't understand, when we talked a little bit earlier, is why Picard does trust these people. Like, he just takes them at their word that they're from the future. Like, he doesn't do any kind of digging or checking or, I mean, there's nothing. He just, oh, you're from the future. Okay. I mean, I understand that Picard understands that time travel is possible, but anybody can beam in somewhere and say they're from the future, you know? Yeah. And it was shocking to see that he, like, does he just think that people from the future are so virtuous that they don't lie anymore or something? Is that why?
But this could also be why, when we get to season 5 in A Matter of Time, he's very suspicious of Rasmussen.
That's true, maybe.
Because
maybe
he's had this
experience.
Maybe he
just kind of learned his lesson.
But the interesting thing about this episode is we never know for sure if these two Vorgons are good or bad. Are they really who they say they are, or are they just thieves trying to steal it? Because even though Vash says that, you know, there's the report that two Vorgons came back and they tried to steal this thing, just because they tried to steal it doesn't necessarily mean that they're thieves. They could simply be trying to retrieve it to take it back to the future. So we never really know for sure if they're bad. Do you guys think that they're up to no good?
I mean, that would seem to be the implication, but I think, you know, like you're saying, it was left intentionally vague. But, I mean, I don't know if Picard really did trust them as much as, you know, you guys are saying, because he did also tell Riker to set up the transporter to blow the thing up if need be, right?
Yeah, but I get the feeling that he did that because he didn't want Vash to leave with it.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
I'm not sure. That's just how I read it. It's convenient that he did, though, because then he was able to. Yeah. Although he said a 2-second mark, and then the thing went off in like less than 1 second, so I'd be a little bit nervous.
It's a Risian second.
Well, the problem was is that it wasn't Miles running the transporter that day, so that's why it was off.
Apparently, in season or an early draft, that the scene 2 actually had a repeat of the opening scene, so it was supposed to imply that eventually they actually did get it because they arrived later the second time and he was already there. It's just like there was a loop, and they said that the Twilight Zone sort of ending wasn't really working.
Well, that's one of the things I wanted to talk about in this section is the time travel element, because it's kind of soft time travel. Picard is not time traveling, but then we do have this element in there of time travel and what you guys think about that. I don't know. I kind of like the implication that they have tried before and that they'll try again. And you kind of think about the fact that maybe Picard and Vash keep meeting over and over and over, but you're never actually shown that. I kind of prefer that rather than having a sequence where I actually see it happening again and again.
Yeah, I think it works better as the fun implication, especially because it plays as a soft romantic moment between Vash and Picard. That idea that they keep replaying their adventure over and over. And so, you know, having watched this year or last year, a Doctor Who episode where he was doing the same thing over and over and over again in an episode, you know, it gets kind of tiresome sometimes. So them just alluding to that fact, I think, is a lot more fun. And again, I like you were talking about, Aaron, this episode's so tightly done. You know, there's nothing extraneous. And so I feel like if you had added that, it would have felt kind of extraneous. It was just more fun to kind of leave it as a wink to the audience and a fun little moment between the characters and then move on, you know, to the next trade agreement or ferrying of a diplomat.
And it wasn't about time travel. That was just a backdrop. That was right. It could have been anything. It could have been Romulans after the Toxutot. You know, it didn't really have to be time travelers.
Well, and the object didn't have to be something from the future. It could have been something from the 24th century that was dangerous.
Which they both really treated fairly casually. So I guess in that time period, you're like, oh, so it's from the future. Because they've slingshotted around the sun so many times and gone back in time and they have the Guardian of Forever. I guess that's just an expected thing.
You know what's so interesting, though? There's a nice connection with Enterprise here because somebody hid it in the 22nd century. What you don't know is it was while Archer was on the planet. So that's where the connection to Enterprise comes in.
Is this coming from Manny Koto's magic bag of hindsight?
Exactly.
Okay. While we're on the topic of the Toxutot here, one other thing that crossed my mind watching this latest time was that in Generations, Soren's goal would have been much, much easier if he could have gotten the Toxutot, because he could have used that to stop the stars and kill the stars.
That is true. A lot less work.
Well, but he knew it had blown up, right?
He knew that the Toxutot had been destroyed.
Blown up. Yeah, right?
I guess so. I guess everybody in the 24th century knows what happened to it.
Or Soren got pulled out of the Nexus in the 23rd century. So if he had been smart, he would have gone and found it before Picard could destroy it and therefore did his plan even sooner.
That's
than
right.
He did.
So, he would have gone back to Earth and talked to Archer's family, and they would have found Archer had recovered the Toxutot, put it in a shoebox along with some of Porthos's stuff, and left it at his grandma's house.
Man, we are just tying it all together.
Yeah, that's way better.
I can't wait till Brian Fuller does this.
I was going to say, you hear that, Brian Fuller? If you need some writers, we're right here. We've got a lot of great ideas for you. All right, what did you guys think about Max Grodanchik? He's everywhere, playing a Ferengi in this episode. You know, it's interesting that Armin Shimerman played a Ferengi, and then played Quark, and then Max played a Ferengi, and then played Rom. And there are a few differences in Max's character here, though I recognize Max in here a lot more easily than I recognize Quark in The Last Outpost, especially in just some of the inflections and the way that he says things, even though the makeup is a bit different. But what do you guys think about him?
It's weird because I didn't realize that it was him at first. And when I was listening to it, you know, listening to him talk, I was like, man, the teeth that they give the actors who play Ferengi really make them talk in like a very specific way. This is strange. He sounds just like Rom. And then I'm like, that
it
makes
is
sense.
Rom.
It's like Rom on caffeine or something. Just like,
yeah.
It's a little bit more upbeat.
What was interesting to me was I heard the voice and I was like, oh, that's Max. And then I also was then kind of looking at the makeup they have him in and seeing how by the time they got to Deep Space Nine, it's a lot more refined.
Yeah.
And it's not quite as bulky on their face because it really doesn't look like him because there's so much makeup covering every part of his face. And the nose is so much bigger. Like everything is...
Well, the eyes are done differently as well.
Yeah. But he does the Ferengi so well. You know, it's not surprising that they bring him back for Deep Space Nine to play a Ferengi that's going to recur over and over and over again, because he really has a talent, strangely enough, for playing these characters and making it come alive and feel realistic. And I guess that's a compliment. Yeah. But it's a real talent that he ended up having. And like you said, Mike, I was looking at those teeth he had in his mouth, and oh my goodness, it was, I don't know how you talk at all with that much of a prosthetic in your mouth for those teeth. It's incredible. So, you know, it's it really is amazing what they were able to do and the people they were able to find to bring these, you know, alien races to life. You know, Michael Dorn had to do the same thing with the Worf teeth in his mouth too. So it's just like, that's a lot of years in prosthetic makeup and in you know, prosthetic mouthpieces too. Ugh.
Especially with this being an Ira episode, and then Ira goes on to DS9 and taps Max to come back and play Ferengi. And I can see why. I was just waiting for him to say human, but he said human in this episode. Yeah. So he hadn't refined the human pronunciation yet.
There was another person from Deep Space Nine in here as well. There was Whatley from Trials and Tribulations. That's the person, the woman who first approached Picard.
Oh, okay.
That's
yeah.
right. Yeah. That's right. Yep. I know. I was like, I've seen her
Bashir's
before.
great-great-grandmother.
Yeah. Bashir's great-great-grandmother approached Picard and propositioned him.
Yeah, and wears a very strange outfit, let's just say. Like, it's odd. She needs, Ryzeans need better fashion sense. Let's just say that. So,
yeah, it looked like a plastic rain slicker. It was maybe an homage to a Blade Runner, possibly. You know, it's got that sort of replicant kind of thing going.
You're right. It really does, actually.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of thing.
It was the 2360s. You know, they all had, like, Picard always wore those weird. And this is the other thing, because I've noticed he's worn this in multiple episodes where it's like the drapey thing. And I don't know if the implication there is supposed to be like, this is high fashion in the 24th century, or if the implication is Picard's a dork. He does not know how to dress, you know? You know what I mean?
Troy specifically says, oh, you look nice. But so I don't know if that was like, is that being, no, is that that kindness of like,
she
oh,
has
you
to
nice.
Say that to the captain.
That's the type of thing you say to your boss, you know, that's just, and you know that he knows that she's not sincere. Oh, you look nice.
For you.
Yeah, thanks. All right. Any more thoughts here? We talked about Vash and Picard together quite a bit earlier on, which we have on our outline here for the end, but I think we've probably said everything about that, unless you guys have any other points.
I think it's one of those shows that you don't get the sense that you'll actually ever see her again, because you tended not to. There would not be the character would not return. It'd be just like, that's just a fun one-off. But then you didn't get the sense that there was going to be the character coming back. So it was just sort of, it was a nice quick journey. I don't know what I'm saying. I guess, but it was just, it didn't feel like there was a sense that the character was going to come back, because it just didn't happen. And it was sort of, it was fun when she did. It was like, oh, good, continuity.
Well, she seemed like someone who was going to go off on her next adventure, right? And you would never see her again.
So. Like, or Regis O'Connor, you know, it's like, he never comes back.
But then she comes back also in QR Cordially Invited, right, Matthew? Remember that book we
did
on literary tricks?
She does. She does turn up in that great book, You Are Cordially Invited, right there with the Picard and Crusher wedding. So it's pretty, that's, I love that she is a character that you do end up seeing again. Deep Space Nine was so big on its continuity and its recurring characters. TNG only had a few. But, you know, when you think of them, it's Q and Vosh and
Lursa and Bator,
Luxana. Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
So, you know, those are really the recurring characters that we get. And it was nice that this did become somebody who actually did come back. And it worked well enough, this relationship that she had with Picard, to bring that forward and kind of see if there was a possibility for it to ever go anywhere, or if they would always be kind of on opposite sides of the fence. And so,
all right. Well, any final thoughts on Captain's Holiday before we wrap up here and also give our ratings? Mike, do you have anything?
I think that it is a lot better than I remembered it. I think that maybe just because of when I had watched it before, either you know, because I was young or because it was when I was watching Star Trek obsessively or whatever, or as part of like a rewatch, I never really gave it credit. I never looked at it as its, you know, own thing. And looking at it now, I'm appreciating it a lot more than I ever have in the past. I've never not liked the episode, but I like it a lot more now. And I give it 3.5 out of 4 Speedos.
Very good. All right. How about you, Aaron?
I think if I go back to when I first saw it, because I'm sort of the reverse. I've seen it so many times that as I watched it more and more, I just didn't enjoy it quite as much. But maybe just because I was more in a critical mode as opposed to just enjoying it. But I remember the first time around, I really, really liked it just because of the fun adventure and how tight it was. So I would give it 3 out of 4 replicant uniforms.
Great. How about you, Matthew?
You know, I was watching this episode tonight before we recorded, and I'm making dinner, and I'm listening to the episode, watching it, and I found myself laughing out loud, you know, because certain lines were just so funny, and I thought to myself, I didn't remember this episode being so good and so funny. I mean, I always enjoyed it, but I just didn't remember enjoying it like this, and maybe it just helps not to have seen it in a long time as well. And coming back, and it feels more fresh and fun and new, and it actually feels, in a lot of ways, a little bit more modern too. Yeah. Just like what we talked about with the way that the crew is joking together and just how everything's working. So, you know, this is definitely for me a very solid 4 out of 4 badly placed bathing suit holes. If you notice in the background, there's a lot of people in weird bathing suits that just have random holes in the most odd places. So, yeah.
That's the Risian way. As Mike said earlier, it's 2360s, man.
It's true. That's true. Just got bathing suit holes everywhere.
Holes everywhere in the 2360s. All right. So, for me, it's just a fun episode that I've always really enjoyed. I don't know so much that I like the character of Vosh, but I really like how Jennifer Hetrick plays the character. I think she has, especially in this episode, she has a very natural performance, and I think she's very beautiful, and she's just a good actress in this role. And I think she plays off of Patrick Stewart in a really nice, relaxed way, where she feels real to me, and so I really enjoy it. And I like time travel elements. I like time travel stories, but I also like when they just have some time travel elements here that make the timeline feel larger. And so that's cool as well. And you mentioned, Matthew, that it feels modern. And this episode is actually from April of 1990. So we're just coming right out of the 80s. And Ira said about this that one thing that they were trying to do with the episode was to portray female character differently. And he said in making Vosh, it was an attempt to bring in a ballsy woman who's not your typical Star Trek woman, a clear thinker both in terms of what she did in her own life and sex and the whole bit. And I actually think that kind of holds true to what Roddenberry was trying to do in his own way for female characters, even in the 1960s with the original Star Trek, but they couldn't push the boundaries that much. They weren't allowed to. But you carry that forward, and I think when you look at the female characters on The Next Generation, it does feel very much like the show was written in the 80s, because that's when it was written. And so at the time, anyway, in the 90s, I think that Vosh was portraying a very independent character in a way that we didn't see as often, certainly as we would see today. And so in that sense, the episode does feel very modern to me as well. So I'm going to give this episode 9 hoverballs, which are the 24th century drones, except they're maybe even more annoying because they fly right up behind your book when you're trying to read.
Awful. Awful.
Awful. All right. So Mike and Matthew, thanks for joining us today to talk about Captain's Holiday. Before you go, Mike, tell everyone where they can find you around the interwebs and the network.
Well, you can find me right here on Trek FM doing commentary Trek Stars, where we talk about the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek. I'm sure that we're going to be talking about Brian Fuller in the near future, probably just touching on it for now, but you can check that out. And also, I guess, producing From There to Here, the daily Star Trek show thing. I guess they're all Star Trek shows on the network, right? where we talk about every episode of Star Trek on a daily basis. So check that out, too. And go to CommentaryTrackStars.com and check out Commentary Track Stars, where we don't talk about Star Trek.
And I'll just point out, because I know sometimes when I listen back to your commentary, Trek Stars and Track Stars and all, if you don't know what those are yet, the spelling may be a little confusing. So on the network is Commentary Trek Stars, T-R-E-K, but the website is Commentary Track Stars, T-R-A-C-K. So that's where you can go to get all Mike's other stuff.
We tried to make it as confusing as possible, yes, and hopefully we succeeded.
Okay, so Matthew, how about you? Where can people find you around the interwebs and elsewhere on the network?
You can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can find me with you, Chris, talking about the Orb. We do all Deep Space Nine there, so check that out. I also do Literary Treks with Dan, where we talk about the books and the comics of Star Trek. We interview the authors. So much fun. We just had Kirsten Beyer on, talked about her brand new Voyager book. Fantastic interview. It's just amazing. Go check it out. I'm on the only show on the network where we're not talking about Star Trek. A couple places there. The 602 Club and the 602 Club Star Wars feed, which we're doing a review contest right now on iTunes, so just go give us a review and you'll be entered to win. Both of those shows, so much fun. You know, we talk a lot of Star Trek on the network and we love it, but we need a place to talk other things. So just hit up the 602 Club and I think you'll have a great time with us. We just recently did Dune, the old David Lynch film, so check that out. We had a blast doing that show. And do another podcast off the network with my friend John Mills, who's also here on the network on Commentary Trek Stars. And it's called Aggressive Negotiations, just two guys sitting around talking Star Wars. So check us out at Aggressive Negotiations there on iTunes and online at aggressivenegotiations.squarespace.com.
You should have named the show Just Two Guys Sitting Around Talking Star Wars.
You know, that's a good name. It's just long for a podcast.
I thought you were going to tell me someone was already using it, and so you couldn't.
That's a possibility, too. So,
okay, all right. Well, thanks again for joining us, guys.
Thank you.
Well, Aaron, that was fun. I know it's not your favorite episode of TNG, but did you enjoy the discussion?
No, I did quite a bit, and maybe I painted it a little bit darker than I was. I did enjoy it. It was just a couple little things that just didn't quite click for me.
Yeah. Well, it was great, and I think we brought up a few points about it that maybe some people hadn't noticed. I know that you all brought up some things that I hadn't considered before, and that's one of the great things about the Ready Room. So it was fun going on a vacation to Risa, but that's not the only thing that we've been doing here on the network this past week. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Earl Grey.
Geordi is the one that's like, you know what? No, you're wrong. You're wrong about Data.
I'm going to drop a challenge right here, and Data's totally going to step up to the plate, and you're going to get served, Plasky.
And that's how LaForge created Moriarty.
I'm not saying it turned out good, but I mean, he had good intentions.
The Orb.
The Wadi, a fun-loving race from the Gamma Quadrant, arrive at DS9 eager to play a game with Sisko and the crew, one that appears to be a matter of life and death. All right, so are we moving along, Matthew?
Oh, we're moving along.
Is there any redeeming value?
The Ready Room.
He's carrying in the lamb chop sock puppet saying, she stayed at her post.
While Charlie Horse ran.
While Charlie Horse ran.
To the journey!
It feels like I just won an Oscar and an Emmy and a Tony. All at the same time. And a People's Choice Award. And a Nickelodeon Award.
Dang.
So, yeah.
So not quite an EGOT, but close. Commentary, Trek Stars.
I haven't seen Mean Girls.
You haven't seen Mean Girls.
I know. My God. Everybody wants me to see Mean Girls.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you have to see Mean Girls. I mean, after Josie and the Pussycats. So.
Oh, how could I forget Josie and the Pussycats?
The 602 Club.
I actually like when they bring in the big container for the brain fish at the beginning.
That's so weird.
Yeah, and it really opens mysterious. Up and it's, you know, speaking through the...
And all the minions that have to mop up after it at the end.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny.
Although it's like a slug trail.
You can actually see one of the guys while he's talking kind of wandering around mopping up. I was like, what is that guy doing?
Literary Treks.
You're totally right that when Atonement was done, I really did feel like everybody needed a break.
Like a Kit Kat bar?
There wouldn't be challenges and obstacles and things, but I wanted the next sort of series of adventures that they faced for a while to be more infused with the sense of wonder that sort of underpins all of Trek.
Women at Warp.
AF, which are the initials that Picard carved into Boothby's tree back on Starfleet Academy, and that is how he met Boothby the groundskeeper.
Well, we never did learn Boothby's first and second name, did we? It was all a ploy to get to hang out with Boothby.
Meta Trex.
If I look at the Abramsverse now, having talked it out, it seems like they're both an alternate timeline and an alternate reality at the same time. Not every sense of alternate timeline, not every sense of alternate reality, but there's at least one sense in which they overlap, and you can say you can have your cake and eat it too, and the Abramsverse is both at the same time.
Melodic Trex.
I wanted something for the cars, you know, a phrase describing them, which is amazing. And I wanted to use a different word for that, for amazing. And in this case, I sought out the African Swahili word, Kushangeza, which is an actual word that means amazing.
And introducing Saturday Morning Trek, a show about the animated series and all things Trek in the 1970s.
Chekhov was in the first season, but he was working on the third deck behind the boiler room and was ill with a condition called Malaprovsky's malady, which is a kind of 23rd century version of Montezuma's revenge, and was hidden in the bathroom, ensconced there for hours and hours, while poor Mr. Khan's genetically engineered kidneys about to explode pounded pitifully on the door, begging to be let in, until finally the door opens, Chekhov steps out, Khan looks at him and says, "Your face, I remember."
That's the best explanation I've ever heard.
you get the idea that I've told this story before.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You can find them everywhere you get your podcasts. Of course, we're a featured content provider in iTunes, so you can go to itunes.com/trekfm, and that'll take you straight to our artist section. You can also find us in all the podcast apps, third-party apps. Just search for Trek.fm. We're also on Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, BlackBerry, SoundCloud. This show, The Ready Room, is on Spotify as well, so you can find us there. And as I understand, Spotify is finally rolling podcasts out to everybody in the United States. So if you're listening and you use Spotify, even if you don't listen to The Ready Room on Spotify, do me a favor and just check and see if it's there for you, because I'd just like to know. I cannot check myself because I'm in Japan, and so I'm blocked from Spotify. Too bad for me. But anyway, it's there. So you can find us all over the place. And again, on our website, you can stream. You can also download the MP3 file, and you can grab the RSS link if you have some other way you like to listen and you need to drop that in. And while you're on iTunes, if you have a moment, please consider leaving us a star rating and a written review. We love to hear what you think about the show, and that also helps other Star Trek fans find the show as they're searching in iTunes, because subscriptions especially affect where we place in the search results. So that's very helpful to us, and we really thank you for doing that. I'd also like to take a quick moment and thank our associate producers here on The Ready Room. Without our associate producers, we would not be able to bring the show to you. Renee Roberts, who's been with us since the beginning on the network. I love Renee. She's a big supporter of Trek FM and The Ready Room. Also, Zachary Fruling, who listeners know from Meta Treks, and Sam Piasek, who is a supporter of the network and The Ready Room. So thank you, Renee, Zachary, and Sam, for helping us get The Ready Room out to everyone. And if you'd like to become an associate producer, you can, not only of this show, but any of the shows that you love on the network, and you can do that through Patreon. We need your help to keep the network going. We are a listener-supported network. So if you go to patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you can find out everything that you need to know about how to support us and the perks that we have for you, our special website, Patron Zone, the roundtable where you can actually get on mic and you can talk Star Trek with hosts and other patrons, and we put that in the master feed. And in fact, Aaron, before you started podcasting with us, because now you have your own show, Saturday Morning Trek, you took part in the roundtable. What was that like for you the first time?
It's great. It was fun to be able to actually put a voice and face to some of the people that I've talked to in the Babel conference. And it sort of was my little entry into podcasting. It got me comfortable with being able to feel like I'm speaking without stumbling over my words. It's quite a lot of fun.
What did you think going in, having not, you know, been on mic and doing the podcasting? What were you expecting when you went in? How was it different after you did it?
For the roundtable?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that kind of that first experience, you know, getting on like this and talking Trek.
It was actually quite easy. I was actually surprised that it was just click, click, you know, got your microphone. You know, you can use a headset from your iPhone if you want. And it's just really simple. And it's great to be able to see everybody. It feels a little bit like the Brady Bunch. You've got, you know, everybody all paneled around you. And so, yeah, no, I didn't think it was difficult at all.
Yeah, for our shows, of course, we have different hardware set up and such. But for the roundtable, we try to make it as easy as possible. So however you need to connect, you can. You can even, someone asked me this the other day on Twitter, actually. I think it was our listener Ian from Ireland, I believe, asked this, can you join using just an iPad? And yeah, you can do that. In fact, Amy Nelson did that on one of the most recent roundtables. And our system that we use called Zoom has an iPad app. There's also for Android as well, so it doesn't have to be iOS. And yeah, you can just dial right in.
Yeah, we've seen some people use iPad, which is interesting because all of a sudden their pictures, they're much more free than us sitting at a desktop. Right. You're like, wow, what is happening? You
know, there's someone at the door. Let me go check. But I'm still here, so don't worry.
Yes. That works pretty well. It's great.
Yeah, so the roundtable is a lot of fun. So you can participate in that as well. You can find out everything that you need to know at patreon.com/trekafilm. So just go check that out. The roundtable, by the way, is from the $15 per month level and higher. Patron Zone is $5 per month and higher, but we have all sorts of different perks scattered all throughout. Okay, so if you'd like to send us some feedback on today's show, there are many ways for you to do that. You can find the network on Twitter. Our username is TrekFM. That's also our username on Facebook, facebook.com/TrekFM. We have the Babel Conference, which is our closed listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field, and that will come right up. It is a closed group, so if you're not a member, you'll need to click join, and we'll let you right on in. We have great discussions over there. We've got about 1,100 people in there right now talking Star Trek all the time. And you can also send me an email if you go to trek.fm/contact and choose to send to a show and choose the ready room. Or you can go to speakpipe.com/trekfm to send me a voicemail, and I'd love to hear your voice. Now, Aaron, when you're not, you know, trying to pick out the perfect swimsuit to wear on your vacation to Risa, where can people find you?
You can find me actually now on the network at Trek FM, co-hosting with Darren Moser, Saturday Morning Trek, which is our new podcast about Star Trek, the animated series, and everything else that was Star Trek in the 1970s.
Including the Spock Siren helmet. You're going to do an episode about that, right?
Yes, we are. We may even produce one for the Patron Zone. You never know.
Like an actual helmet?
Yeah, well, or something you could print out. You know.
Oh, that would be cool. Okay,
we'll work on that. no, we are going to do a review of all of the toys and the fun stuff. And I even have a few Mego characters that I'm going to be able to take pictures of and show. And
okay, cool.
So
great.
Those are the early 1970s Star Trek figures for those who are not in the know.
Yeah, I really encourage everyone to go listen to Saturday Morning Trek. The first episode is a lot of fun. It's just you and Darren kind of introducing the show. And then in the second episode, you actually have Walter Koenig, and you recorded that interview with him right where you're sitting right now.
Exactly.
In your studio right there, you and Darren.
Yes, after we drove him across town in a torrential rainstorm, and we were warned by Larry Nemechek not to lose one of the remaining Star Trek original series actors. So.
Exactly.
We weren't nervous enough as it was until that happened.
Yeah, but, be careful in that yes. LA traffic for sure.
But no, it was a lot of fun, and he's a fantastic person. Just so many stories. It was crazy, and you know, we just scratched the surface.
Yeah, really, really, really awesome that he was on. So, what if people want to find you in social media? Where should they go?
You can find me at Geek Filter on Twitter, and you can find me in the Babel Conference, which is kind of just running in the background on my computer most of the time.
Awesome.
And I'm waiting for the Babel conference to go to 1,701
people.
So I can take a screenshot of that.
We need a celebration when that happens, for sure.
Yes.
Awesome. All right. Well, if you want to find me, you can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones, the letter C and Brian with a Y. And that's my username on Facebook and pretty much everywhere. You can also find me in the Babel conference. and elsewhere on the network. As Matthew mentioned at the end of the feature, you can find me with Matthew on The Orb, which is our dedicated Deep Space Nine show, and we talk all things DS9. You can also find me doing our daily news show called Hyperchannel. So if you didn't get enough news at the beginning of the show today, tune in every single day. I talk about a different news story every day for about 7, 8, 9 minutes, sometimes 10 minutes. It's a short show that you can consume very easily on a break. And I give you the facts about the story, but I also share my thoughts on it as well. So it's just my way of being on mic every day. And then you can also find my writing about Star Trek over on the official website at StarTrek.com. And then outside of the world of Star Trek, I do have a podcast that's not about Trek or science fiction. It's actually about life in Tokyo and entertainment and culture and everything that's happening here in Japan. And I do interviews on there as well. I've had some great interviews with creatives and directors and singers and chefs, even all kinds of things on there. And we do Japanese language tips and various things. So you can find that on iTunes. If you search for Metropolis On Air, you can also find it in other places as well. Or go to metropolisjapan.com and search for podcast if you don't see it on the front page, and it'll come up. And you can check that out if you want to hear me talk about things other than Star Trek. All right, Aaron. Well, I'm going to head back down to Ryza because Picard told me that he left his book down there and he wants me to go get it for him.
Okay, Chris, you do that. I'm going to talk with Riker about a Horgon that he left me, and it's time to stick a 29th century artifact in it because the Ready Room is done.